We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
The majority of folks in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Before I bring Big Ant on the show, let me just tell you that it's an audience of one, but I am loving how Will County is just cracking back on itself. People like, no, that was Wilmington, or as we like to call it, Wiltucky. No, that was Coal City. Like, everyone is just, anyone who lives in Will County is taking a shot at another city in Will County, and I am here for it. So if you want to keep texting your shots about Lauren and where he's doing those pool parties at in Will County, send them our way. 670-11 is the Tech Zone. Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time and shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Okay, now we can talk with Big Ant Herron, who works for everybody. Most importantly, though, he's a Score football analyst. And that's why we love having him on, because he knows a little bit of everything, and we'll tell you a little bit of everything about everything. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from, and their service department is open, alpamonteford.com. Mr. Herron, how are you today?
Loho, doing well, man. What's the deal with these pool parties? What did I miss? What's going on out here?
Okay, well, here's what happened. We were talking about injuries that you get, and those injuries that you weren't expecting, like you weren't playing anything. Like, it started with me talking about waking up with a pulled muscle from sleeping. That's where it started. Okay. And so this guy said, I tore a rotator cuff at one of my naked pool parties in Will County.
One of my pool parties.
Yes, he has these frequently from what he had told us, and he was trying to boost a young lady up, and in my mind I'm thinking that the way he did it is, you know how like sometimes at basketball games or football games you'll see the guy hoist the cheerleader up? I think that's what he was doing. and he hurt himself. But most people are now intrigued with his naked pool parties that he has in Will County. And everyone is trying to figure out where that type of activity goes down. So a lot of people in Will County are giving me ideas. It's Morris. It's Marengo. It's Manuka. It's anywhere in Will County. So that's where that comes from.
So he didn't present these as being, like, open to the public. This is kind of a private invitation-only sort of deal?
Okay. He said that he lives on 22 acres and doesn't have any neighbors, and that's why he can have the naked pool parties. I asked him if he was a cult leader. He said he is not a cult leader, but there are a lot of people that would join his church if he were to open one up. That's all I gotta say.
I mean, is he the Chicagoland Hugh Hefner, perhaps? I mean, I'm assuming Hef at the mansion had a few naked pool parties, from what I understand. I never got invited. You know, it's a little before my time, but I would say maybe he's – that would be my guess. That's the first guess that pops into my head. He's the Chicagoland Hugh Hefner.
Well, wait, but because Hugh Hefner is Chicago Hugh Hefner because he's a Hyde Park guy.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I just assumed he was Cali.
Yeah, no, he moved it out there, but I want to say Playboy's offices were in downtown Chicago originally, and I know that Hugh Hefner had a place in Hyde Park.
Like, why hasn't there been a biopic on that dude's life, by the way?
I think there might be some problematic stuff.
I mean, isn't that what makes a biopic great when there's problematic stuff?
I do think that they did one. I think there was a series, maybe like an FX series. Huh. I think that's right. But right. Yeah, that I guess now there's going to be a 9-part series on Tom Brady.
That's, I saw that,
and I'm interested in it for sure. I wonder if they'll have our buddy and your brother Hawkeye, Matt Bowen, on, since he was the pick right before Tom Brady. And we know that Tom holds a grudge against everyone, right, just like Jordan did. So I imagine Matt Bowen will be on there going, what did I do? I just got picked one pick ahead of you. That's not my fault. Anyway, so that's what's been going on. So I had other stuff that I wanted to ask you, but before I get to the football stuff, and we're talking with Big Ant Heron here on The Score, what did you think of how The Last Dance wrapped up?
I enjoyed it, man. I mean, I think that the aftermath, kind of the fallout with Horace and company coming out, kind of throwing bows at MJ, it probably should have been assumed or expected to some extent. You know, I mean, when everybody's not depicted completely in the most positive of light. So I could see where guys had some issues with a couple of things. I didn't necessarily think Scotty came off that in such a negative light. I didn't think they necessarily showed as much of his excellence as they perhaps could have in a 10-part series. But certainly the episode that was kind of devoted to Scotty, I thought he came off exceptionally well in that one. Certainly showed some other great moments, and there was a couple of things they glossed over when they were going through that 94-95 time period. I thought they could have spent some more time on MJ's baseball dalliance and how well he ended up kind of beginning to do at the minor league level. And then I thought they certainly could have given a little bit of a deeper dive into how great Scotty was in that initial season that Mike was gone. And I thought those things were touched on. I thought they were referenced. I thought a deeper dive, I certainly would have enjoyed even more in-depth looks at what made MJ start to perform so well and how well Scotty really played. And, you know, obviously it's a difficult thing, even with a 10-part series, to try and get all that in when you're kind of covering the full scope of the dynasty. But overall, I enjoyed it. I'm not sure if I look at it as the greatest sports documentary ever, like some folks are talking about. I think it's very personal to us, because we grew up or we covered or just enjoyed watching the Bulls dynasty as it played out. And as Chicagoans and as a country, I think folks really got a kick out of it. I certainly did. I think like the OJ documentary is, to me, on another level from what I felt like I really got out of The Last Dance. But I definitely enjoyed it.
Was there anything that you felt like you needed from it that you didn't get?
I mean, I certainly... Me and my wife were talking about this a lot. I get where, was it Jason Hayer, the director, right? I get where there's some quotes out there where he's saying like he didn't necessarily feel he needed the perspective of Juanita Jordan. I think it would have added to it, even if it wasn't, hey, let's go into what happened
their marriage
or anything.
Right.
But she was there. Like if we got like a 15-second blurb from each of his kids in the very last episode that seemed pretty unnecessary. They didn't really add anything to it. But I think Juanita
felt thrown in.
Yeah, very thrown in. You know, Mike probably just said, hey, let me make sure we get my kids some airtime here. So it gave him some quick airtime. But Juanita could have legitimately added to some of the human end of what we didn't know or didn't appreciate about Mike, because he was fairly private with most things related to his personal life. We knew a lot about his dad. We knew a lot about Dolores, who has aged in reverse somehow. We didn't necessarily know as much about how things weighed on him, what the pressure was associated with that. And if they are on, well, what is reported as amicable terms at this point, I feel I certainly would have enjoyed and gotten a lot out of hearing from Juanita in her perspective on how things were going down throughout the early stages of his career and certainly what was happening during the 90s.
Let's talk football. Big Ant Heron played football. He's one of our football analysts here on The Score. Looking at the proposals that are out there, some of the things that have been leaked by Albert Breer, the IR, them adding some more designated guys to the IR is something. Are there any rule changes that you think the NFL should make from what you're already seeing and hearing?
I mean, I think rules changes, especially when it comes to football, to the NFL, they tend to stay ahead of the curve on it. So it doesn't surprise me that they're going down this road. I don't necessarily feel that adjusting the onside kick is going to be something that necessarily changes the game. But because the onside kick is, and just the kicking game itself, kick coverage is in a lot of ways sort of seemingly on its way out, on its last legs, then I suppose it suits where we're at, just with the rules changes associated with football anyway. So it'll be fun if they do it. For me, just as, you know, in football terms, it's kind of an old head at this point. I don't necessarily think I don't feel it's necessary, but I get it. And I like the fact that the NFL doesn't wait. Like, baseball tends to wait until things are absolutely necessary. And there's things that feel necessary that baseball still isn't doing from a rules change standpoint. And the NFL doesn't tend to do that. The NFL tries to get out in front of things. And, you know, even like right now where they're talking about the replay official on pass interference and removing that and that not being around anymore because they gave it a one-year trial and it didn't work out so well. Even going back to before some of your listeners may even recall, there was a period where the NFL tried instant replay for a bit and didn't dig it after a couple of years, and it went away for a little bit, and then it came back once they felt like they had a better system in place. So this has kind of been the history of the NFL and their willingness to continue to tweak things and adjust things and stay sort of ahead of the game along those lines. So I love the fact that the league is willing to do that. So the onside kick change, if they get rid of that and they're saying they're going to go to this, you know, 4th-and-15 deal, all right, I guess it'll be cool. It'll be fine. It'll be kind of fun. Doesn't feel necessary, whereas the whole the sky judge element and the potential for removing the pass interference review, I think those would be things that would likely add to the game itself.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's something that you can take away from the XFL to bring the sky judge in. And it's in just an opportunity to get things right. Like, that's it. That's an important goal for the NFL to get things right. If you were getting ready to play and you were someone that you lived on the edge as far as NFL rosters went, what would you want and how willing would you be to go to an NFL facility once they opened up?
Like, for me, like for where I was at in my career, there was points where, you know, maybe felt a roster spot was more solid in a particular season. There were more often than not times where I was on the outskirts and wasn't necessarily sure. Didn't buy a house at any point in my 5 years in the NFL. Like, I waited. The first home we bought was after my NFL career was over, because that was the first point where I said, all right, I got a little more control over where my location is going to be. And so for me, if there was a stretch where I didn't have access to a team facility, I would go and just work out at some public fitness center, 24-hour fitness or whatever. So just putting myself in that mental frame of mind where I didn't have my own kind of personal fitness center downstairs at a palatial estate, then yes, having access to the team facility, I would certainly get as much detail as I could from everyone, you know, associated with the squad, to say that, you know, just to know what protocols are in place, not only just, you know, their cleanliness at the facility, but, you know, what's going to be expected of me from a temperature check standpoint. How frequently will I and teammates and coaches and everyone else in the facility be wearing masks? I would want to know what's going on, just so I know what the information is and what I'm getting myself into. What level of risk, you know, could I personally kind of be assessing that I would be getting into? But when it came down to that, after I collected the information, yeah, I would want access to the facility, and I would, you know, perhaps tell my folks if I lived near my parents at that time, like, hey, I'm probably not going to be seeing you for a few weeks just in case, you know, even if I was around them prior to that. So I would take some additional precautions outside of the facility. But, you know, with knowing that that would give me a better leg up to continue my playing career, especially as a guy towards the bottom of a roster, yeah, I'd see myself going back in and getting my work in at the facility.
All right, now let me tap into Anthony the dad. Let's fast forward 16, 17 years. Bishop is a football player.
Mm-hmm.
How comfortable would you be in this environment with sending him back to campus?
That's the thing, man. I think college sports, I view it through a different lens than the discussion we have about the NFL because, you know, with college campuses opening back up, yeah, as a player, I would have wanted to go back in. But I think the discussion, like there was a piece that Dan Wolkin wrote where he was saying that this would be probably the optimal time for college athletes, especially, you know, the revenue sports, football, basketball, to unionize, just like Northwestern tried to do a while back. And I think from a leverage standpoint, that's true. That's accurate. It still, even with everything going on right now, doesn't feel likely to me. But I think it's incumbent upon the parents to advocate for their kids in this situation, because whether or not their son or daughter wants to get back to campus as quickly as possible and wants to start getting those workouts in, parents still need to get as educated on the situation as they can. What protocols are in place at that college campus, at that university? What are the safety measures that they're taking to make sure that they're trying to make that environment as feasible as possible to try and avoid some kind of rampant infestation of the coronavirus? And there's no 100% version of that, but to make sure that as many precautions as are available to them are being taken. And if that's not the case, then I would tell my son to sit down, and I would tell the coach that he'll be back when you put me at ease that you're at least doing everything you can to keep my kids safe, because there's already a level of risk associated with the sport that's being competed in, with your kid being away from home. You can't put them in bubble wrap, but this is still very new. And I think a lot of us are getting into the mental mind frame that we got all the information we need right now. And it's just not the case, man. The top scientists in the world are still a few months into really collecting data on this. So for me as a parent, I want to ask as many questions as I can. I would want to be the stage dad. I would get in the coach's ear and the head trainers and doctor's ears just to know, what are you doing? And if they put me at ease, then cool, Bishop, keep me updated and go do your thing. But until that point, then to me, it's really on the parents a lot to get as informed as they can on this, because in the end, the pressure is going to be on the schools, on the conferences, on the NCAA to make this happen, because so much money is involved in it. And the players obviously aren't getting much of that, really any of it when it comes down to it. They're still getting their scholarships, so there's a portion of that compensation going to them. But when it comes down to it, these guys aren't on salary. These ladies aren't on salary. So if you're sending them back to campus and feeling that pressure that would be associated with not losing the additional $4 billion at least dollars that could be at risk here, then I'm not just going to send my kid back to campus because somebody else is worried about losing their job.
Yeah, and I think that the role that the coach plays is going to be a little different now too, where they're going to have to like re-recruit kids, I think, and get the parents on board, but they have to do it in a way that allows them to convey that they have a good understanding of where things are and how the university is approaching it. It can't just be the bombastic coach's coach and he knows what's right. Like, I think there's some real selling that has to go on here.
There should, and I believe there is already to a certain extent, as the reality that states are reopening, universities and the NCAA are putting themselves in a position to reopen as well. Like, the NCAA made their ruling that, okay, we're going to allow the potential for voluntary return to facilities on June 1st. So now we're hearing a lot of teams talking about, okay, we'll give it a week, and then maybe June 8th is when we'll start to allow some folks to come back in. And I think it's right to be in that mindset of seeking a return. Just the big concern is because so much pressure is on it that the proper protocol, the proper steps may not get taken, just in feeling like there's a rest. Like Lincoln Riley, the Oklahoma coach, I thought had some really salient points he made about it a little less than a week ago, I think, at this point, where he basically said, what is the rush now? You know, there's so much that we still don't know that, to me, with the season still being months away, and we can provide medical coverage. The NCAA relaxed some rules to allow teams to provide levels of medical coverage to their players where they live, as opposed to a guy having to be on campus and at the school hospital and those types of things. So there's no need to rush the process, because once you ring that bell and bring everybody back, then the floodgates are open to the enhanced level of risk by being around each other to that extent. And I mean, think of like the last college athlete I can think of who died in relation to sports competition was just a couple of years ago. Maryland had an offensive lineman named Jordan McNair who died during football workouts. Northwestern fans who are old enough will remember there was a Northwestern football player a couple of decades ago who died in the midst of football workouts. Just think, it took one NBA basketball player just contracting coronavirus to pretty much shut down the sports world. Think if a college athlete came here, and even though the numbers for those young and in shape and everything else are very low as far as what we associate with the risk associated with those individuals. But if one were to have that happen, or one were to get it and bring it to a parent and have a parent be in peril, that's the thing that everyone wants to be able to avoid. But the pressure of the dollars, the pressure of the finances, I think is pushing this thing forward a little more quickly than some folks are comfortable with.
Big Ann, as usual, I appreciate your time and your perspective. You do a great job, and I knew that you would give a well-rounded answer to that question, having the perspective of being someone that played big-time college football and now being a parent. I'm glad that you broke it down the way that you did, because I think there are a lot of parents. It doesn't have to be football. I mean, it could be the sports that are going to survive this, that – there are a lot of parents that are wondering whether or not it's the right decision to send their student back to campus, and I can't blame them for that.
Man, the thought of having a player, whether male or female, go and be out there competing and to contract this and have it turn bad, have it go really bad. I mean, hopefully everybody who gets it, and you know, you got to figure out, all right, if one offensive lineman has it, then maybe we shut down the entire offensive line group or whatever those discussions are being had. But if one of them goes bad, just think about the ramifications of what would take place from that, from something that to some extent would be viewed as avoidable if they weren't all brought back, especially if there wasn't rampant testing available. And obviously there's not going to be a vaccine in place for the foreseeable future here to get through what's right now scheduled for this coming football season. So, you know, that ship, I don't think that's sailing anytime soon. But that to me, and I do hear, you know, certain individuals talking along those lines. I just hope that's on the forefront of the minds of folks who end up making the decisions and not something that gets pushed to the back burner because of all the financial pressures with it. Because I don't want to give the impression the money doesn't matter. The money is extremely important, and there are so many jobs on the line associated with this. But then you're going to ask essentially the unpaid labor to be the ones to take the biggest risk associated with this. All right, maybe we won't have any fans. Maybe we'll just have a few fans. But players, you return to the same environment you were in with virtually the same level of physical risk that would have been there before with this new virus that we're still discovering. It's just there's an inequity there that's, you know, there's always been some inequity when we're talking about some things like this, but the enhanced inequity of take the physical risk of a virus that we still don't have figured out yet, and there's not a vaccine for, and you're just getting your same scholarship that's been gotten for generations and generations. That to me is an inequity that would be really unfortunate if folks don't have a level of balance to the way these decisions play out.
Have a wonderful weekend, sir.
Loho, you too. Tell Panther I said, hey, man.
I will do that. That is Big Ant Heron. He's a good man and thorough. We're going to talk with Shams Charania about the NBA. Which system to return makes the most sense for them, and how close are they? There are some NBA players that are raising some concerns. I'll talk with Shams about that next here on The Score.
McNeil and Parkins, afternoons 2 to 6 on The Score.
Craig Elam.
I love playing against Michael because he brought out the best in you. Yeah, he cut your heart out. He did not want to be your friend on the court. But as soon as that last buzzer sounded and you walked across that line, there was always a handshake and a respect that he always showed and always granted me.
Listen to McNeil and Parkins on your ride home 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Shams Charania is one of the best newsbreakers in our business. I had the pleasure of working with him a little bit over at Stadium Network. This guy is incredible. You talk about a guy that's connected around the NBA. I'm lucky to have him right now joining me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park. You can check out Shams at watchstadium.com, and I'm happy to have him here on the show. What's up, man?
Lawrence, what's going on, man? I'm glad that we're finally able to talk shop since all this kind of unfolded. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good. I'm glad that we could connect because, hey, you know how I feel about you. You are on it. I know that when it comes to what's happening in the NBA, you are getting texts and calls on the daily. So I'd love to know, where do things stand right now with the NBA trying to figure out how to restart?
Yeah, so, I mean, they're trying to figure this out. There's a strong, strong desire among owners, star players, executives, the majority of all of them, the league office, Adam Silver's made it clear. They want to restart the season. And so now it's about figuring out the logistical details, when, where, and how. The when being, is it going to be mid-July that we can resume play? How will it be? Will it be a training camp of some sort? In the market, and then you go to the bubble site, and then where, you know, and as I reported this week, Orlando's Walt Disney World has become the front runner, the clear destination for the NBA to resume its season amid this pandemic that we're in. As I reported this week, the NBA is in serious conversations with Disney about the property, and a clear momentum has gained for the NBA to have its resumption of the season there, at some point around mid-July. And, all the efforts are going to need to be put in over the next few weeks because, Lawrence, it's not as simple as, you know, this is when we want it to happen. You have to shore up coronavirus testing protocols. You have to shore up your relationship with the NBPA. You're not going to be playing without fans. So that revenue loss, how will you make up for that? How will you deal with no fans? How will you deal with the playing environment? How will the bubble environment be? There's a lot of logistical details that the NBA still needs to map out.
Shams, for people who don't know, why is Orlando and the Disney property such an attractive place for the NBA to restart?
So, you know, the relationship with Disney obviously is there, but beyond that, the closed-off environment that Disney World can provide, the resort can provide, in that, you know, they have the necessary complexes for gyms, for working out, the hotel, the restaurants, to have a very controlled environment for something like this. And if you want to be safe, which Adam Silver has made clear, his ultimate concern is just the safety and picking, you know, the best scenario out of a bunch of bad options, essentially what we're doing right now, because whatever the NBA decides on, there will be a level of risk. And so everyone needs to be comfortable with that. But listen, out of Las Vegas, out of Houston, potentially, you know, the NBA views Orlando as the safest, most controlled option for all the teams to play out of. And, you know, some have said an AU environment. I really call it, you know, like a whole, you know, I think Mark Cuban said it best, a Hotel California environment where you try to keep everyone, you know, in one setting as much as possible and play out until the last team standing, takes home the trophy.
Are you thinking that they go straight to the playoffs, or is there still talk of maybe a regular season restarting?
They're still working on those details, but from my conversations with team executives, players, there's a sense that they all want there to be some form of a regular season, some form of a, you know, whether it's a play-in, an exhibition season. They want something before you go into a playoff, because just having a quick training camp, a quarantine training camp, and then going into a playoff, that makes it tough for everyone. So to have some basis of an exhibition run or a regular season is the preferred route of a lot of executives, players, owners that I speak to.
When do you think that we'll have a decision one way or the other? Are we a few weeks away? Are we a couple weeks away?
So Adam Silver told owners last Tuesday that he wanted to make a final decision on the season in 2 to 4 weeks. So we're, you know, by next week, we're going to pass the 2 week mark. There is a board of governors call late next week. So I would expect there to be some movement toward a decision into next week. And at some point, you know, next week will mark the 2 week mark. Could it go into June, first, second week of June? Sure. You know, but Adam Silver gave a 2 to 4 week window last week.
Sean Charania is one of the premier newsbreakers in our business when it comes to the NBA. He works at Stadium Network. You can see some of his great work at watchstadium.com. I've been having a lot of discussions about this week with a bunch of different guests, and I'd love to get your opinion on it, Shams. I've been talking about the relationship that the players have with Adam Silver and ownership in the NBA versus what we're seeing, kind of some battle lines being drawn in MLB between those players and their ownership and their commissioner, Rob Manfred. Why do you think there's a different tone when the players talk about Adam Silver in the NBA versus how MLB players feel about their commissioner?
I would say the two most important things are transparency and inclusion. Adam Silver has tried his best to form committees and have, you know, the players informed as he, you know, he is, you know, coming up with different ideas. He had a very lengthy, you know, 70-minute long conversation with most of the NBA players earlier this month. And you just don't see commissioners getting on calls with all their players and speaking to them with as much candidacy and just transparency, you know, that Adam Silver displayed. And so I think that's what gives him some bonus points, some brownie points with the players. But, you know, he's always taken more of a player friendly approach as commissioner. And at the end of the day, he does report to the owners. He does have an onus to deliver for the owners. But he has had the lines of communication probably as open as they've ever been in the NBA.
So let me move to something that's a little less heavy. What did you think of The Last Dance?
No, it was great, reliving, you know, a point where I wasn't fully, you know, grown enough to be cognizant of what's going on in the moment. But it was tremendous to see all the old footage and being able to live what happened, you know, 20 plus years ago.
Yeah, I was thinking about you with that because I'm like, you're a young cat. So I'm curious, like, what did you take away from it that you talked to tons of people in the and around the NBA, but what was it like for you to experience it and see some of this stuff of how the NBA used to be versus what it is now?
I think just the mere fact that Michael Jordan, every single, you know, episode, I think just continued to ingrain and elevate how much of a killer he was on the court and how he wanted to win at no cost. It's like every episode had at least one or two anecdotes of why MJ was a killer, why he was the GOAT, why he wanted it so bad. And I think, you know, over the course of 10 episodes, it just continues to, you know, that theme continues to hit home at you. And, you know, everything he was taken personally when he wanted it to be. Everything was taken as a slight when he needed motivation. And so I think players, you know, when I'm texting with players, like, they just marvel at that. And I think that they want to absorb some of that and apply it. And it's like every time I finished with an episode, I wanted to go play basketball. Like, I wanted to be, you know, holding a basket. I wanted to shoot. Like, I wanted to be, you know, involved in some competitive activity.
I was wondering what the players were saying to you while this was going on, like what that dialogue was like. Were they impressed? Were they scared? Like, how did it make them feel?
I think basically just ingraining in the mind as well that, like, Michael Jordan, these are the reasons why Michael Jordan was the GOAT, and these are the episodes that are, you know, this is the type of television that proves it. And so, you know, it'll obviously live on. You can watch on Netflix, wherever. And, like, I think it just continued to, you know, it was funny. You know, a lot of people, these are life memories that people went through, but to see it go on, you know, the way it was edited and put together, I think it showed, again, why Michael Jordan was one of the greatest of all time.
What have people around the league told you this morning about Jerry Sloan?
Yeah, you know, obviously it's saddening. It's heartbreaking. And Adam Silver just put out, you know, a very long release statement talking about Jerry Sloan and just how respected and how admired he was among the coaching community and, you know, players, his former players, you know, Paul Millsap. You know, he had great respect for him early. And, you know, Jerry Sloan never got over the hump as, you know, as a champion, you know, as far as in those 90s runs with the Bulls that showed on the Last Dance. But clearly just a legendary head coach, one of the best ever.
Shams, I appreciate the time, man. I know you're even now. I know that you're busy. I know that people are blowing you up and giving you all the latest stuff. So thank you so much for being on the show. Let's do this again soon.
Lawrence, I appreciate you, man. Be safe. Be healthy. Thank you.
That's Shams Charania from Stadium. That guy, man, I was checking today. Like, it was just a couple years ago that Shams was a student at Loyola. And now he's got almost 800,000 followers on Twitter because that kid breaks news. So I'm really happy to see that his career continues to ascend. He's one of the good guys, and he works his ass off. So I'm glad he had some time for my show, man. I try not to push that button too often to put the Sham signal out. But I'm glad that he had a couple minutes to come and hang out with us. I want to take a break. A buddy of mine that I had on the show last week played for Jerry Sloan in the 90s Jazz, and he just got back to me with some really nice words about Jerry Sloan. I'm going to share those with you next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
We kind of kicked off the show today celebrating the life and career of Jerry Sloan. Passed away. He had been suffering from Parkinson's for a little while. Last week on the show, I had Stephen Howard on. Stephen Howard is a DePaul legend, and he played in the NBA for, what, 6 seasons? And most of that time was with the Utah Jazz. And so I reached out to him this morning because I knew how much he cared about Jerry Sloan. And he got back to me, and he said that he hopes that he wishes that there was an opportunity to have like a service, like a big service for Jerry Sloan because of how many people he touched, like from a life standpoint, and that it's a shame that there can't be, at least now, like you're going to have to have some sort of memorial service for him maybe later on. But Stephen went on to say to me that, quote, he had more impact on me professionally than anyone, gave me a chance multiple times. Close quote. And there are a lot of people that feel that way about Jerry Sloan. The NBA did a really fun thing on talking about Jerry Sloan's career. They did 10 things that you need to know about Jerry Sloan. And I'll just read you a couple of them because he's kind of legendary in how folksy he kind of is. So one of the things is walk 2 miles to school. Really. Growing up in farm country and McLeansboro, Illinois, Sloan was the youngest of 10 children whose father died when he was 4. A typical morning for him while attending high school was wake up at 4:30 to get his farm chores done, then walk or hitchhike to school for morning basketball practice. Before that, in grade school, Sloan did his learning in a one-room schoolhouse with a graduating class of 2 people. He also was drafted twice by the same team. Sloan had false starts at the University of Illinois in Southern Illinois, withdrawing from each school before he found a home at Evansville. Sloan led the Purple Aces in scoring, rebounding, and floor burns in winning back-to-back NCAA Division II championships, earning tournament MVP and second-team All-American status both years. Because of his transfer year, he was eligible for the 1964 NBA draft, and was chosen 19th overall by the Baltimore Bullets. After Sloan opted to return to college for his senior year, The Bullets drafted him again in 1965, number 7 overall. This is the one that made me laugh while I was reading it during the break. It's titled Another Man's Treasure. Sloan didn't collect any championship rings as an NBA player or coach, but he did pick up plenty of baubles and doodads along the way as a passionate collector of antiques and salvageable items discarded by others. That was in addition to the vast array of farm tractors, mostly John Deere, he accumulated through the years. Quote, I don't know why, but I've always enjoyed collecting things. Pottery, dolls, toys, marbles, tractors, I collect them all. Close quote. As a player, Sloan could get out his aggression and hyper-competitiveness in multiple ways. As a coach on the sidelines in his suit and street shoes, his options were more limited, but he always had the referees. It once was estimated that Sloan was assessed 446 technical fouls in more than four decades as a player or a coach. He also made headlines for his physical confrontations with NBA officials, pushing former ref Bob Delaney in April of 1993, and shoving Courtney Kirkland in January of 2003. The first incident triggered a one-game suspension. The second one cost Sloan 7 games. 2 years after his final NBA game, Sloan in 2013 in a radio interview said this, quote, one thing that I wish I'd done a better job in my coaching was getting along with the officials. I was never too good at that. I think I hurt our team a couple times when I got a little too carried away with wanting to win so badly. Close quote. Jerry Sloan, man. Part of some great Bulls teams and the first Bull to have his jersey retired. Rest easy, Jerry. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Incredible job by Jordan Malley and Julio Raseo for their great work on today's program. Enjoy yourself. I'll be back Monday. So if you're looking for something to listen to between noon and 2, I'll be here for you. Thanks for your continued support of The Score. We really do appreciate it. Coming up on the McNeil and Parkin Show, you got yourself a treat because Mark Grody is going to be on the show today. And that's going – like that in itself is fun time. He rains down fun. So check that out. That's coming up next. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll talk to you Monday at noon right here on The Score.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.